A podcast that shines a light on the positive, healthy, hopeful projects going on in Humboldt County. We'll talk about things that are happening to help everyone live a better life and what things you can do in your corner of the world. Look, we know about the problems. We talk about them, read about them in the news, and see it every day too. That's what drives us to want better and to be part of the good. My name is Juliette Ferry, and I will be your host of the Humboldt Healthcast, which is another community project of the Humboldt IPA here in Eureka. Okay, welcome to the Humboldt Healthcast. My name is Vanessa Verdiak, and I will be your guest co-host this week. A few weeks ago, we set up a special number for you to call in. That's right, you, all of our listeners, to tell us what you wish you could say to your younger self. Many people called in with all kinds of powerful things they wish they could tell their younger selves. Here's a selection of some of our favorites.
This is Francis Albert Burgess Jr. I just want you to know that it's okay. It's okay to make mistakes. You don't have to take so long to call your dad. You don't have to take so long to call your mom. Forgiveness is the key, and balance is the other one. So once you forgive those people who have hurt you in any way, you can start to restructure your life with drugs, abuse, any type of negative thing that has been hindering your life and your skills. It is easier if you cut that off, such as a cancer. You cut that off and you leave all the bad things behind. No one's going to tell you that the way that you can. Nobody's going to tell you that it hurts the most when it's the best for you. Nobody's going to tell you when you're up against the wall and you're staring down death that you're the only one that can dig yourself out, can walk away. Be love, be light, and know that being over masculine, over feminine, any of these things, if you think of it being perfect for you, then that's what it has to be. If you want to be gay, straight, if you want to be invisible, totally visible to the world, know that your choice is your own and have confidence in that choice. Be love, be light, blessed love in the power of the Most High. I love you.
Hey, this is Michael Bishop, clinician in the community, father to children, soon to be husband. I want to leave a message for you all to possibly use a message about what I would tell my younger self. Reflecting on this idea, it's easy because at my age now, at 44 years old, I know that everything is connected. When I say that, I mean that, you know, the people that I have in my life, the goals I set for myself, what I do every day makes up who I am, makes up what I'm going to be, makes up how I feel. All of those things added together are like an equation or a cocktail that ultimately produce who I am. If I had to give myself any advice when I was younger, junior high, maybe high school, I would tell myself that the people I surround myself with are going to be who I am. I would emphasize the idea that if the people around me didn't care about my success or who I was or how I felt, then there really aren't people I want to be around. And I would tell myself to set goals, daily goals and weekly goals, things I wanted to achieve, ideas I wanted to expand upon, physical goals like exercising or accomplishing things like skydiving or rock climbing or something fun that I would really want to hang on my hat, like something I wanted to define me or my courage. And I would know that by doing something for myself, taking care of myself, I would realize that I am at my best every day. Looking back now, I realize, you know, how smart I was or how capable I was or how much, you know, how good looking I was, maybe how youthful and nice looking I was or something like that. Because, you know, at times we all struggle with how we see ourselves, our self-esteem, our confidence. So I think one of the biggest lessons that I've learned over time is that the more I invest in myself, the more I can rely on myself. The more I scrutinize who I give myself to, you know, the more I up that criteria, the more I consider who I'm around and what I do with those people, the better off I'll be. So I hope that in some way, me thinking about what I would tell myself can help whoever's listening think about what they're doing right now. I really appreciate being able to have this conversation with myself right now and with you. In a nutshell, I think that making sure that in every 24-hour period you do something for yourself, you try to keep good company, and you have your goals in mind, and then you'll get to where you want to be a lot sooner than you think. So thanks again. I appreciate you all. Have a good day.
So far, we've heard from two people on what they would tell their younger selves. Thank you, Michael and Francis, for calling in. We also thought it'd be fun to hear from a child on what they would tell their older self. So here's a 3-year-old boy named Lyndon, and this is his message to his adult self.
Think of something
that full of strength.
You would tell your older self that you're full of strength?
Mm-hmm.
This is true. What else would you tell your older self?
I'm full of peace.
You're full of peace? I believe that. I see that in you. Anything else? Okay. Thanks for sharing.
In April, we invited a guest mentor by the name of Jared Nava to speak to our youth in our Boys to Men Empowerment Group. For those of you that may not be familiar with this group, it's a strength-based support group for boys to share what's going on in their lives and listen to community mentors with lived experience. Each week, our boys gather at 3 school sites: McKinleyville Middle School, McKinleyville High School, and HCOE's Court and Community School. In April, we coordinated a special event called Conversations on Justice. And throughout the school year, our students have expressed dismay as to what is going on in our country. They've shared their fears about police officers and how their fears are now heightened after learning about the murders of so many unarmed people of color. They've also shared stories about witnessing the arrests of their own family members. We decided that it was time to talk about justice. So all sites watch the film, They Call Us Monsters. This film takes place in a high security facility in LA that holds violent juveniles. One of the youth in the film was Jared Nava. The film explored his experience being tried as an adult, facing a sentence of 162 years to life. After the film, we were left wondering what the future held for Jared. We discovered his sentence was commuted to 10 years to life in March of 2020, and Jared was released in December of 2020,
and is now in a halfway housing unit working with the state capitol. He's been sober for 8 years, and he's attending Sacramento State this fall to pursue a degree in business administration. As I mentioned, Jared spoke with our youth as a guest mentor, and we naturally got to the topic of what he wished he would tell his younger self, which sparked the interview today. Hello, Jared. I want to welcome you to the Humboldt Healthcast. Welcome.
Hello, how's it going?
Good. Thank you so much for being with us. So I want to start this interview with what you remember when you were a teenager. When you were talking with our boys, you mentioned how hard it was for you to focus when you were in school because you had so many stressors going on in your life. Can you tell us a little bit more about this?
Well, when I was a teenager, my parents, they separated. My mom and stepdad, they got a divorce. And so at that time, I was bouncing back and forth between them a lot. And I think I felt a sense of uneasiness and the sense of, you know, what our family was, where our family stood. And then financially, we weren't stable. So things like that caused uneasiness. I had started working at the age of 11.
Wow.
I worked after school from about, you know, whenever we got to school, around 2:45, 3 o'clock, to about 8:30, 9 o'clock at night every day. So my focus began to shift from trying to focus on school and to kind of being concerned about, I want to be able to bring my sisters home some pizza, or I want to get a haircut, or I want to get some new clothes or some new shoes. And I think at that point, I began to grow up fast, where I felt like, okay, I'm my own provider to some degree. And then I wanted to provide for my sisters as well. And so I think my focus shifted from, you know, just being a kid playing sports and going to school to trying to be a man at a young age and trying to take on those responsibilities. Like, and, you know, which some things were, I think, were good because they taught me how to manage money, like as far as, you know, paying my own phone bill and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
However, I seen the contrast between, kids who necessarily don't have to, opposed to, you know, kids maybe who are asked to do that to help them grow, you know. And so I think for me at that time, I was trying to, you know, trying to figure out life for myself. And so I figured, why would I go to school and waste 6 hours of my day when I could spend that 6 hours making money too?
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt like, up until that point in my life, I felt like money makes a difference. You know, you always hear people say, well, money can't bring happiness. But as a teenager, as a young teenager, I felt like, well, everybody who has money seems happy, right? So my goal was to be successful, was to have money, was to be rich. And then, you know, just like you realize in life, you know, money isn't everything. And so then that void still wasn't filled because we didn't really have a family structure. And so our family wasn't, you know, basically was non-existent. So then I went to the streets searching family, right? And I realized that I was still seeking identity as a man. I was still seeking, you know, a way to cover up my own insecurities and my own shortcomings. And so I sought that at the park, you know, and I found that I found role models at the time, which, you know, weren't positive, but they were, you know, some image of a man.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I clung to that. And, you know, then I started, you know, tagging and, you know, walking around with weapons, and then, you know, started off with knives and screwdrivers and hammers to, you know, eventually guns. And so it took away, in a sense, like in the documentary, we wanted to write a movie called Los. And the point of it was loss of innocence. So we wanted to tell this story of when did we get to that point where we were no longer innocent kids, but we had transitioned into, you know, at the time, what all of us were being prosecuted for was very violent crimes. And so we realized we weren't innocent at that point in time in our lives, right? So we wanted to kind of trace back to, when did we lose our innocence? And I think that for me, I lost my innocence, you know, like it talks about in the documentary, when I seen my stepfather, who was the greatest role model in my life at that time, attempting to commit suicide. Mm-hmm. And so after that, I just continued to seek for what a man was, because I know that, you know, and I understand that he was going through things at that time in his life. But as a young teenager, I didn't understand that. And I just felt like it was selfish. And so all the morals and things that he had instilled in me, I kind of threw out the window, and I was seeking something new to feel that now. And then that's when I took to the streets. And so it took away that focus of, you know, like I said, you know, just being a regular kid. And now I'm trying to be a man, and I'm trying to see how to provide for my family, for, you know, my sisters, and then for myself ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. God, thank you for sharing all of that. And especially the piece about, you know, your stepdad and experiencing that. And it really speaks to that idea of like, the implications of having like a high ACE score. I don't know if you know much about like adverse childhood experiences. Are you familiar with that idea?
A little bit.
It's like there's a screening that you can take, and for every ACE that you have, you're more likely to have difficulties in your life, whether it be with your health, but in so many areas, like your life will be shortened if you've had parents that were divorced, or a parent that was incarcerated, or you were sexually or physically abused. And so all this trauma impacts us in a variety of ways. And that's why I think it's so noble that you're now on this path of trying to prevent that for other youth and to share your story. And the idea too, like what you were saying, like how would you focus on school if you're like trying to support your family? I think that's an incredibly unrealistic expectation that we have for a lot of families. And I just wish that more school systems and people in the community could work to uphold those students and help them find balance if they are in that situation. I don't know what that looks like, but I'm glad that you really spoke to that. And then when you were speaking to the kids and we were talking, you know, in the same vein about prevention, you talked about how everything that happens in the home isn't always helpful, and that you wish that you had more support. How can we help our youth have more functional relationships when they grow up? Like, what are some things that we can do as community members?
I think as members of our community, I think there's a call for us, you know, to be involved. And I think it's not so much like a one day event, but it's like an everyday thing, you know, like really, really being involved in the communities that we live in, and really seeking to give back and seeking to help out and coming alongside of, rather than, you know, trying to lift up, but just coming alongside. You know, it's kind of like for me, I think about the Bible, right? And I think about, in the Gospels, it talks about Christ carrying his cross, and it talks about they having another man come along to help him. And so I think about that in our communities, like we have to come alongside the youth, because that's the future. We have to come alongside them and just be there, and not like, because sometimes I think the message is lost and you shouldn't do this or you shouldn't do that. It's more so like, what's going on? What you mm-hmm. doing today? Like, let's go throw a ball around, or let's go paint, or let's go whatever it is, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's being active in somebody's lifestyle, because I've seen the community try to do things where they have like these events at the park, or they, you know, they do these things, but okay, well, what happens after you leave that event? Like, what mm-hmm. what happens the next day? What happens the next week? What happens after that? And so I think for us to be effective in helping kind of build those relationships in our community is being involved and having people who are, you know, self-sacrificing there, and that are willing to actually sacrifice their own time mm-hmm. and spend it with kids that need it, mm-hmm. right? With kids that are in these demographics where they don't have a dad in the home, or they don't have a brother in the home, or they don't have, or even if they do, maybe they're busy working, you know, they have to work 50, 60 hours a week just to support the family. Mm-hmm. And so I think if we just make Like I was talking about when we were talking to kids, like, you know, if we made rec centers available for kids to come to every day and allow them to, like in prison, I've seen a lot of people with talent, like amazing talent, whether it was drawing or, you know, playing sports, you know, or making things, like some people knew how to crochet or other people knew how to like build things. And if we made a rec center in communities and made it a place where people can truly develop their talents and their skills, I think that that's the best way for us to be of service and then to, you know, kind of teach, you know, and tear down those fallacies that a lot of us are taught growing up,
mm-hmm.
you know, like to help build the next generation. Because if all you know is like, let's say as a parent, if all you know in parenting is to hit your kid whenever they're wrong, all your kid's going to do is hit somebody whenever they're wrong about mm-hmm. something. And so I think, you know, being in an environment where we just teach, you know, we teach what healthy relationships look like, mm-hmm. but people aren't going to want to go and sit in the class after school. So it's like, you have to create an environment where it's like, it's not just mm-hmm. a self-help group. It's an environment where you could feel comfortable. You could eat, you can, you know, whatever you want to just chill and watch a movie. We have, you know, movie, like mm-hmm. everything, just provide that kind of space, I think is extremely important.
Yeah, it's critical. And I think not just the environment, but also the way we speak to our youth. I think that's really critical too. Like that whole idea of just, you know, if I'm going to demand respect, you know, then I better give respect to them as well. And I think sometimes adults are missing that component and like talk down to youth and then they kind of miss that opportunity. So when I think about you, what could a moment, what, like if an adult would have approached you while you were in the midst of all this, do you feel like you would have heard them? Like what kind of approach would have worked with someone like you?
I think about like when I was already in juvenile hall, because I didn't really have anybody reach out to me when I had people reach out to me and try to tell me what to do, but that didn't really work. But when I was in juvenile hall, and Scott Budnick used to come in and he used to show us, you know, pictures of all these different trips he was taking or, you know, people he was seeing. And then it kind of like, for a lot of us, it opened up our minds like, man, there's such a big world out there than these little blocks that we're keeping ourselves stuck in. Like there's this big world out there and I can't leave the park, you know, like I'm stuck in the park all day long and I'm missing out on this huge world. And so I think it's like bringing awareness. Like when you don't tell somebody, you just show them like, look at this, is, you know, you ever did this before? You ever went snowboarding or you ever went hiking? Like, I know it sounds weird, but have you ever done it? Like, look at, this is what it looks like. This is, you know, I think it's kind of showing people, what that looks like, because, you know, when you tell somebody, oh, you should change, or like, what does that even look like? What does change look like? Right. Does it look like I'm working at McDonald's? Like, I don't understand what does change look like when somebody tells you like, oh, you should change the way you're living. Well, what do you mean? How? In what way? So I think when, if somebody was to come alongside me and to expose me to a different lifestyle and to expose me to the steps to how to get there, because as a young adult or as, you know, a teenager, you may have big dreams or aspirations, but like for me, I was like impulsive. Like I'm like, okay, yeah, let's do it. And then if it's gone, then it's gone from my mind. But if you have like steps, kind of like structure, you know, to kind of help you stay on that path and to have realistic goals that you can begin to reach and to start building up your self-esteem, then I think that that's some of the stuff that was needed for me mm-hmm. at that time, just to continue to help me grow and you know, maybe sidestep a lot of the terrible decisions that I made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know the idea of like visualizing the future is hard for us sometimes, even as adults, like let alone for kids. And I remember feeling that way about going to college. Like, I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to go to college, you know, like, so I think that's that you're so right on, you know, to be able to put youth and give them those opportunities to see that there are alternatives, and whether it be traveling or going to school or whatever they choose to do. Yeah. So now you're in this totally different part of your life. And I wanted to see if you could just kind of speak to us about what habits you're practicing to ensure that you'll stay focused on your present goals. So what are some things that you're doing now?
Something that I really implemented just to kind of stay focused even just this week, and is waking up early. So I've been waking up 5:30. I used to do it a lot, but I kind of got a little lazy when I came home. Got a little lazy because, you know, at first you're up late talking to all these people that you haven't talked to in a long time. Or, you know, just, you know, family and stuff like that. And so now I'm kind of putting myself back. I think it's important to have a schedule. Like I kind of talked about when we were talking to the guys, is I think it's important to have a schedule. So I've been trying to put myself back on a schedule, you know, going to bed at 10:30, waking up at 5:30 in the morning. So I get enough sleep, and then starting my day off, you know, with coffee and, you know, making my bed and reading. So I think it's extremely important for me. I like to get up and read just to kind of like, get myself focused. So I think little things like that are habits that I've developed, along with, you know, just staying consistent. One of the biggest things that stunts people from growing too is procrastination. You know, when you put something off, because it feels so much better when you know you got to do something and you just do it right then and there, because then it's done and you're like, you sit back later on and you're like, oh, I don't got to do nothing. Like, I took care of everything. And then it's so easy. Like, sometimes when you procrastinate, you overthink things and then you make it like this big thing that's super hard. Where when you just get up and like, if I got to wash the dishes, just go wash them. Like, I'm going to do it later. Like, now let me just knock this out, put some music on, knock this out, and then I'm done. And so, like, so I've been trying to work on, you know, my structure, not procrastinating. And then, so that's with consistency as well. So whatever I'm committing to, I'm trying to stay committed to it, trying not to falter or fall off, and just allow those things to develop and grow. Those are the main things I could think of that I'm practicing right now, because I feel like it's so important to be consistent and not procrastinate.
Yeah.
And time management. That's what I mean. Like, with structure, is like, time management is so critical, because before you know it, the day's over. Mm-hmm. And I hate, you know, when you have those days where you feel like you didn't get nothing done. I like going to bed feeling like, you know, it was a productive day. And mm-hmm. even if it was just the little things that I had to take care of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that routine, setting that routine. And I love what you said too about getting enough sleep, because sleep is the foundation. If you are tired, that day is going to be gone. Yeah, I'm glad you said that. So another piece that I'm curious about is, I know how difficult it can be, like, coming out of being incarcerated. My mother was incarcerated when I was a kid, and it was really, really hard. The judgments that she received from the community, ultimately, she, you know, wasn't as successful as she could have been if she had been more supported after she came out. And this kind of relates to what I'm wanting to ask you, is about your self-talk. And I feel like her self-talk was awful, because the people around her were contributing such negative, hateful comments. And then that just sort of added to her negative, you know, self-talk. And then it was like this cycle. So when you get in those headspaces where you have like that negative self-talk, like, how do you pull yourself out of that?
So a lot of times for me, my negative self-talk is usually has to deal with my pride or, you know, insecurities. And so sometimes I just got to take a break. You know, sometimes I got to like put myself in a space and really think about what I'm thinking about. As, you know, as simple as it sounds, but really, like, sometimes we don't even think about, you know, some of the things that are going on in our head and some of the ideas. And so I try to just like see if it fits. Like, does this fit with my life? You know, just because I'm feeling a certain way doesn't mean I gotta dwell on it or I gotta allow it to become a belief in my life. It's just something that I think throughout the day we all experience, that where we feel different things. And so sometimes, you know, there'll be, even if it's for a second, or maybe it may last a little longer, but we have a thought, you know, maybe you're driving and there's road rage, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. it could get you mad, but it doesn't mean that, you know, that first thought would be like, man, what's wrong with this person? But then what do? You're like, you know, for me, I try to think like, well, you know, maybe they didn't mean it. Or I try to rationalize it, mm-hmm. opposed to being like, nah, I'm going 100 because of this one thought. And so I try to really just break it down. I try to break down every thought that comes into my mind and why it's there. You know, sometimes like when I do feel insecure about, you know, the fact that I've been to prison, the fact that I had life in prison and working in the space and the environment that I'm working in where, you know, a lot of people went to college and a lot of people, you know, come from different backgrounds. And I try to remind myself that you never know what that person's story is just because they put on a suit or just because they put on a nice dress. Like, you don't know that person's story. So you can't sit here and judge yourself or self-condemn yourself. And you don't know, maybe they've been through a lot of situations that are similar. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because a lot of people have, you know, like we have in our mind that, you know, or I have in my mind sometimes like, oh, you know, I've done, you know, I have done terrible things, but I'm not alone on this earth. And doing that, like, there's a lot of people who, you know, maybe they haven't got caught or maybe it wasn't as severe, but there's a lot of people who've made terrible decisions based on, you know, whatever point they're at in their life. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I try to remind myself of that, like, when those negative thoughts are coming in, like, oh, man, you shouldn't be here. Like, this is not for you. Like, I remind myself, like, man, like, why not? Mm-hmm. You know, why not? So I try to challenge myself, too. Like, why not? Why can't you? What's mm-hmm. wrong with you? You know? And so I think that the biggest thing is just understanding your self-worth. Like we have such, we're invaluable. Every single one of us was made specifically, was made differently as individual. None of us are the same as anybody else. So that fact alone means that we're here for a reason and that we have a bigger purpose. And I think, you know, when we wake up every day and we have that in our mind, then it propels us to that direction because we're not waking up thinking like, oh, I'm nothing. Or because then when you feel that way, you're going to allow other people to feel to, you know, to basically to treat you like that. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I'm like, you know, I had to break out of that mold because in prison, it felt like you were kind of subhuman to some degree, right? Because there's the correctional officers and then there's you. And so in coming home, it feels amazing when you go to a restaurant and, you know, you get choices, right? Mm-hmm. And I hope I'm not getting off topic, but it's in the sense of like, you realize that like, you know what, you are worth something. And it's those little things that I think we have to remind ourselves when the doubt comes in and, you know, insecurities or whatever it may be tries to seep in and take that shine. Like, nah, like you worth more than, you know, you're invaluable, you're priceless. Mm-hmm. And when you wake up every day like that, it's not being prideful, it's not being arrogant, but it's just understanding your worth. Mm-hmm. And I think when you understand your worth, even when your feelings change throughout the day, like a roller coaster, you're still rooted and grounded.
Mm-hmm. You're so right. Yeah. And no, it's not off topic. I think, you know, when people are incarcerated, they're dehumanized in such a way they're not even able to use silverware and you're called inmate. And I think that does break down your self-worth. How could it not? And that's totally on topic. And I love how you're so self-aware of your own thoughts and to stop yourself when you are having those thoughts and to realize that other people are going through things too, I think is incredibly powerful to stop yourself when you're having those thoughts and to check yourself. And then going back to this idea of like self-love, I feel like that's the foundation for everything. I think that's one of the secrets to life. I feel like if you would have loved yourself, then you probably wouldn't have made some of the decisions that you made. I could be wrong, you know, but I know that that's the truth for me, you know, whether it be different people I was in relationships with or just different choices I made that maybe I regret. I feel like if I would have put myself in the highest light, I wouldn't have made those choices, you know? So yeah. And thank you for speaking to everyone's unique beauty. I think that's so incredible too. We are all so unique. Of course, the reason why we're here is because we would specifically love to hear what you would tell your younger self. So if you were speaking to young Jared, what would you say?
If I was speaking to young Jared, I would tell Jared that that you're loved, that you're cared for, that you have a lot of talents, you have a lot of abilities, you have that I was made for greatness, right? I think all of us were made for greatness, but I would tell myself that. I would tell myself, like, man, you're made for greatness. You're not made for, you know, to die in the streets. You're not made to die in prison. You don't need to fill your body with tattoos to, you know, to be accepted or to be loved. Like, you're fine just like you are. And it's okay to be goofy, and it's okay to, you know, to be serious at times. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. And I would tell myself, you know, ultimately that you can do anything that you want, right? You can literally do anything that you want. Because at the age of 25, I think about the fact that I'm probably one of the, I don't know if I'm the youngest, but I know I'm probably one of the youngest lifers to get out. And I think about that. So had I not, you know, made the terrible decision that I made almost 9 years ago, and had I really known the potential that I have, then I wonder where I would have been at 25 if I went to prison and by the grace of God, got a college degree, and then came home from prison by the age of 25 on a sentence of 162. Oh, I think I definitely would tell myself that, man, the sky is the limit. The sky is the limit, and I'm here to support you through it all. Mm. You know, good or bad, even when you're trying to hide it, or, you know, trying to fake that, you know, feel a certain way and trying to hide it with a smile, like, it's okay. And I think another thing I would tell myself too, to, it's okay to feel things, you know, it's okay to feel sad. You know, it's okay. Like, there's nothing wrong with emotions, because I was raised, to be emotionless and to be kind of one way, or to be everything's okay no matter what's going on. And I would tell myself, like, you know what, it's okay, you know, that you're going through things, that's all right. Mm-hmm. But how you handle it is what's most important, you know. And hurting people is not going to solve anything. Mm-hmm. And hurting yourself is not going to solve anything. You know, using more drugs or drinking more alcohol is not going to solve anything. Mm-hmm. Like, you really just got to give it to God and leave it there. That's what I would tell my younger self, though.
That's beautiful. It's incredible to think how, like, we think emotions are weak, you know, like, we're told, everybody, you know, don't cry, for men specifically, man up, don't cry, you know, be a man, be tough, be strong. And it's so funny, because I've talked to my good friend, Michael Bishop, about this, who's a counselor. And it's like, the real strength is the people that can be vulnerable. That's where the real strength is, because that takes real courage to cry, real courage to feel the spectrum of emotions. And that's like what we talk to the boys about in Boys to Men, like, having that spectrum of emotions, because vulnerability is strength. And our goal is to teach them that, so then they don't have that moment where they one day explode and they end up incarcerated because they never experienced their emotions, you know? So I'm really glad to hear you say that. And I hope that we can continue to encourage our boys and our girls and, you know, gender nonconforming youth to just feel and let those feelings come through. And then, you know, this too shall pass. So is there anything else you wanted to share with us, Jared, before we sign off?
I would just say that, man, just really tap into your abilities. Really tap into your abilities. For me, like, you know, kind of we were talking about before, like, the spiritually, mentally, physically, it's extremely important. Like, for me, without God, without having that relationship, and it's not religion, it's not, you know, like, do's and don'ts and this, you know, this structure of religion. I think it's ultimately, for me, it's a relationship with God. It's a relationship with Jesus. And that's what pushes me. And I have to continue, like, any relationship, like, if you don't build on that relationship, if you don't talk to somebody, it's not going to be there. It's going to be non-existent. So for me, it's maintaining that relationship, reading the Bible. And then mentally, it's just, you know, staying around people who are going to keep me accountable, who's staying around people who aren't going to tell me the things that I want to hear, but the people who are going to tell me the things that I don't want to hear when I don't want to hear, you know, having people in my life that are going to be honest with me, they're going to be genuine. And then taking, I think, you know, you have to have some sense of solitude. You know, you have to take some time for yourself. You can't always be in the midst of people. You can't always be in the scene. You know, you have to take, you know, an hour, maybe, you know, 30 minutes just to have some alone time, just to kind of just sit and just think or listen to music, however that looks like for you. But I think it's extremely important for your mental health. And then I think physically, you know, I think, you know, got to get outside, exercise, or, you know, play some ball, or just, you know, just walk, or just hang out in the park. Like, the world's so beautiful. And I realized that having been taken away from grass and trees for so long, that, you know, that's something that we should never take for granted. Like, this is such a beautiful world that we live in, and, you know, enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That holistic care, you're right. You got to hit on every component, the spiritual, the mental, the physical, emotional, and take that time for yourself. That's beautiful advice. Thank you, Jared, for sharing your time with us. You are truly an inspiration, and we're honored to have you in the Humboldt Healthcast. Thank you.
Thank you, Vanessa.
So now I'm going to read a poem, actually from a book that I wrote called Kissing Lightning. I self-published this book in August of 2020, and it is available on areasontolisten.com. And this poem is called Becoming a Grown-Up. Do you remember how bad you wanted to be a grown-up? How bad you wanted to stay up late, eating all the candy that could rot your teeth to the core? How bad you wanted to drive? You wanted to take yourself to the mall, Claire's specifically. They sold tiny earrings made of just about anything and all that glitter. You wanted to be strong. You wanted to defend your friends at recess, the ones who wore high waters and ate tuna fish, hard-boiled egg sandwiches. You wanted to be heard. You felt that maybe being a lot taller, with wrinkles creased in the soft spots of your forehead, people might take you seriously. You wanted to kiss someone, your tongue a fire hose of Doritos and chocolate milk, praising all the gods that you didn't have braces. You wanted to feel the weight of someone's palm in yours as you voyage through the world's misunderstandings. You wanted to read your poetry on stages built for courage. Your imagination set you wild. You believed life should be built around people's strengths and passions. You knew adulthood meant you might have to swim upstream. You didn't realize that most grown-ups had lost themselves along the way, to chores, to countless bills piling up on the kitchen table, to the way their clothing, once perfectly draped along their bodies, now tight and suffocating. They lost their childlike courage to sing in the driveway with a boombox, delicately amplified to the courtship of their dreams, saying goodbye to a perfectly good mind, once so present, so clear, it didn't know how to be anywhere else but here. Thank you. So I want to thank everyone that participated in this week's episode. Thank you, Jared Nava. Thank you to the folks that called in. We are so grateful to have you in this podcast.
The Priority Care Center is located on Harrison Ave in Eureka, and we provide primary care, mental health counseling, care coordination, wellness coaching to people with the following insurance types: Anthem PPO, Blue Shield HMO, Anthem Blue Cross HMO, and Blue Lake Rancheria. Thank you for listening to Humboldt Healthcast, brought to you ad-free by the Humboldt Independent Practice Association. Our host is me, Juliet Ferry. Our editor is Joseph Burkett. Original music produced by Justin Locke. Our producers are Irina Estes, Jessica Osborne Staffness, Vanessa Verdiak, and Robin Baker. Special thanks to Rosemary Denouden for making this project possible. Please share, subscribe, like, and comment. We are always looking to improve and welcome your feedback. You can find us on Facebook on the Priority Care Center page and on Instagram at PCC School-Based Health Center. Be part of the good, Humboldt.